You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And all I could hear was this bang. And every door that was somewhere in front of that was bang. And it was getting louder. It was like something out of Jurassic Park. It was just like bang, bang. And I'm thinking, who is it? Frank McAvenny comes through the door. Absolutely blotto.
Sam Michael here, and welcome to another episode of Comedians Talking About Football, the most self-explanatory podcast out there, where each episode a comedian talks about the lows, the highs, the overpriced pies, and everything else that comes with supporting a football club. Today's guest is Trevor Bickles. I'm thrilled to have him on, not just because he's a fantastic comedian, not just because he's our first West Ham fan to come on. I know a lot of West Ham fans have been asking for a Hammers episode, but because he's a fan of the podcast as well. He's always very supportive of it ever since the start. He's always leaving me messages saying how much he enjoyed episodes and stuff. And there's nothing I love more than when comedians tell me they actually listen to the podcast. So it's fantastic to have him on. So do you know what? I'm not going to chat away, because if you know Trevor, you know he does the chatting around here. And of course, he's a cabbie as well. So it's what he's born to do. So I'm going to shut up and get straight on with the episode. This is Trevor Bickles talking about West Ham United.
Football. At the end of the day. Football. It's a funny old game.
It's a game of two hours.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
How are you doing?
Hot, sweaty, but good. I'm good. We've decided to do this on the hottest day of the year.
Yeah.
As well. But I'm great, mate.
Yeah, all right, mate. All right. I mean, as we said, this will be going out once the season is all kicked off, but we are recording on, I'm sure many of you remember, the hottest day probably in the history of England, actually. I think it's something like that.
I've seen Satan walk past down the street earlier.
But yeah, well, we're here today to talk about your sort of family roots in a way, because we're talking about West Ham. Great to have you on at last. We've had a few people asking us when we're going to get a West Ham fan on. I think we've had two Tottenham fans on, so it's about time.
Two?
two Tottenham.
You've had the only two Tottenham fans. Yeah. That's it. You've had them.
Yeah, I've had them. No Millwall yet, though. So I don't know any comedian Millwall fans, I don't think. But
I know one. I know
Do
one.
You?
Lenny Sherman.
Oh, of course, Lenny Sherman. I'll have to get him on at some point.
Lenny's Millwall, isn't he?
Yeah. So yeah, what I'll do is then we'll start off as we do every episode. It's with a quick fire round where I just hit you with some questions. Some of these questions I give to everybody who comes on the podcast. Some of them are directed especially for yourself. So let's start with the simple one we ask everyone. Might have a mixed answer. You've sort of given it away already, but I think you'll be able to say yes to this answer, which is West Ham. your team, are they your local team?
Currently, no, but growing up, yes.
I think that's allowed. I mean, you grew up near them. That's allowed.
Oh, put it this way, from my kitchen window, and I always tell this story to people, from my kitchen window, you could see the old South Stand, the Bobby Moore Stand. You could see it through my window. And I literally, if you come out my right door, you turn left, end of the street, there was the ground. That's how close I was when I grew up to it. So there I think that's close enough, you know what I mean?
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Local. Next question. As I said, ask everybody this, surely. Who won the World Cup in 1966?
Oh, West Ham. West Ham. That's an obvious question. Hurst, Moore and Peters, we won the World Cup.
I love it. And who do you consider these days your biggest rival in football? I know West Ham and Millwall, it's got a bit of a history, but I'd be interested to know in the modern day, with the success that West Ham have had previously, who would you say is your number one rival at the moment?
Tottenham. I think if you ask any West Ham fan, I'd say, obviously, yeah, Millwall's Millwall. If we play Millwall, it's always them. But currently, I'd say it probably goes Tottenham's our number one rival, then Chelsea, then Arsenal. I would say is in London clubs, easily Tottenham. For some reason, there is this absolute hatred of Tottenham from West Ham fans. I think it's because, I think obviously geographically, we're not a million miles apart. I think there's this kind of, West Ham have this kind of thought of a, Tottenham fans have got a bit of a delusions of grandeur about themselves, that they're a massive club. Yeah, and I think obviously being the London clubs geographically and logistically in the league, definitely Spurs, yeah.
And do you know what the best thing about that is? I guarantee that you saying that Tottenham are your number one rivals will anyway piss off Millwall. It's win-win, really. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit like when, you know, like how Scotland, like in football, Scotland hate the English. But England don't really give a shit. They sort of go, oh, no, good luck in the World Cup. Good luck. I hope you qualify. And they get really annoyed by that. We go, oh, we're more worried about Germany. And that really annoys them. So I really like that kind of thing. It's win-win.
Oh, yeah, totally. Millwall would hate that. Millwall, but if you go, who you are, Millwall go West Ham. Hate West Ham. Can't stand West Ham. When was the last time we played them? You know, donkeys years ago. So and I think that must really wind them up. The fact that they cut those, like, they must look at us and just hate it. To see how well we're doing at the minute. I must hate it.
So I'm interested to get straight in then with the family history there. As you said, you grew up very close to the ground. So is it all through like your family West Ham fans going way back?
This actually started before I was born. My great uncle, well, all my family is from the East End originally. And so obviously we grew up around the West Ham area. But my great uncle, a guy called Dave Bickles, used to play for West Ham. Played back in the 60s alongside Hurst, Moore and Peters. He was there for, I think it's four seasons potentially. So right back to my uncle was a West Ham fan, a West Ham player, then fan, and then obviously all the family were West Ham. And I've kind of grown up with it. I was born in Forest Gate, which was kind of the local maternity hospital at the time. I then lived virtually around the corner from the grounds. My dad was the manager at the West Ham United Supporters Club where I worked, like growing up, and that's not there anymore now. All of my family, bar one, is a West Ham fan, and he's a Man United fan, but we don't talk to him. And he's one of these Man United fans that have never been to Manchester.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
he's one of those, right? And then even myself, I worked over the ground. In my previous life, I was a chef. So I worked over there as a chef. I've been supporting them since I was born. So you could basically say I was born into West Ham instantly.
Love it. And do you remember your first game at all and the sort of players who were around when you first got into football?
I knew you were going to ask this because this is the biggest, me and my dad even try and remember this and we can't fully remember it because I was going, back in the days, we used to have the reserve games at Upton Park. Right, back in the days, you could pay 50p to go in and watch the reserve games, right? Oh. That's how old I am. Showing me age now, you know. And me and my brother used to go over there from when we were way young. But we're trying to work out, I think my first professional match was about the early 90s. And it was, I'm sure it was Wolverhampton. So you're around that sort. So you're looking at early 90s, maybe someone like Cotty might have still been there. Trevor Morley was there. Ian Bishop, Stuart Slater, Kevin Keane, Tony Gale, Alvin Martin, George Parris, Ludek McCloskey. All that sort of era was probably when I started going to the first team games regularly.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I've actually got quite a memory of that myself because although I grew up in Berkshire and I'm a Reading fan, I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, my first ever game was actually a West Ham game. I believe it was the 92-93 or 93-94 season. And I was about 6 years old, I think, 5 or 6 years old. And I went along because my best mate, he grew up in a West Ham family, similar to you. They grew up very close there. And his granddad was Philippe Cassatari, and he owned Cassatari's.
I know Dave and Paul. This is how close Cassatari's.
Yeah.
Was literally across. Wait, you come out of my house, it's about a 2 minute walk. And I know there was Paul and Dave Cassatari, who used to own Cassatari Sports down East Ham.
Oh, right.
And, which are connected. And I know Paul and Dave Cassatari. So, I know kind of. Yeah.
His son took over later on, Philip. Philippe and then Philip, he sort of gave him the more English Phil name as his son. He took over afterwards. But he was very popular. You know, of course, that is so my mate's granddad, he was running it during the 60s, and he was always kind of well known for berating them after games that they lost. You know, they'd come in after a heavy loss and he'd just berate them all way through serving them. But I think his real claim to fame has come out in the last couple of years because he is the maker of jam roly-polies that, of course, Harry Redknapp has become so obsessed with.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that invented there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was because I remember he was – there's this big thing since he sort of retired, Harry Redknapp, doing sort of adverts for and mentioning his jam roly-polies. And he was on and we didn't know this, by the way. He didn't know this, my mate, till he was on Saturday Kitchen one morning. He was watching, I think it was Saturday Kitchen, hungover one morning. And Harry Redknapp.
That's the only time you watch Saturday Kitchen is hungover.
Yeah.
That's the only time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I watched Saturday Kitchen, I think, for the first time, expecting it to be like Live and Kicking or something. Do you know what I mean? I just watched the hairy bikers doing some cooking, waiting for Mr. Blobby to run through the door. Do you know what I mean?
Sorry, but I interrupted you. Yeah, he was watching Saturday Kitchen.
And suddenly, Harry Redknapp just name drops his granddad, going, "Yeah, you know," because they sort of said, "Oh, you know, you like a good jam roly poly." He says, "Yeah, best ones he ever had, Cassatari's. Used to go there after game. Philip, his name was, used to make them for us, and that's how I got into him. And he would do fry ups for all the team. We're talking, you know, Bobby Moore. Jeff Hurst, all that lot. He'd you know, see them every day. They'd go in there before games, after games, and all that sort of stuff for training and that. So it was really connected to it. And then his son took over, and around that time he got into it when he was younger as a West Ham fan, and his family were as well. So one day me and my dad went along with them, got tickets for a game. And I remember it was against Coventry City when Dion Dublin was playing for them, and I think they lost 1-0 that game. But I mean, what a memory, though. I'm so glad to say I went to the Boleyn Ground, because as a six-year-old, that place in my head will always be like the New Camp. Do you know what I mean? It was massive, just massive in my memory.
Your story's better than mine.
Well, I was going to ask for sort of them early days. Who were the first couple of seasons where you really got into watching football and supporting the team?
Well, the Boleyn Ground, we'll start with the Boleyn Ground. I think to me it was a very unique stadium. Like you said, until you've been to see it and experience it when it's rocking, you don't understand it. And I think it was because it was so tight, so compact, so close to the pitch. It generated an amazing atmosphere in the grounds. And I think the thing is as well, it wasn't so much where it was, it was the history surrounding the ground. Like, I think people go into the grounds, obviously grew up going to the ground from kids, right to adults, and taking their kids, the same sights, the same smells, the same sounds. Unfortunately, something we don't have at the minute over the Olympic Stadium, or the London Stadium, whatever you call it. But I think for me, I think I don't go over the London Stadium. It's nothing major negative, but I think it's not because I don't like the London Stadium. It's just that I love the bowling too much, if that makes sense. I miss it. I think I didn't realise how much I missed it until I went to the London Stadium for the first time. I feel lucky that I've always had the opportunity to go there, and I grew up there, and I've been in every stand there, and it was an amazing place. And I think it's something you'll struggle to replicate over the years, because what these, a lot of these new stadiums being built, maybe in 20, 40, 50 years time, when they've developed their own heritage, these stadiums, you'll get that feeling. But yeah, the Bowling was a special, special place. The smell of burgers. This just always makes you think of that. My early memories as a West Ham fan, I'm trying to think back to sort of the early players. Like one of my favourite players was Trevor Morley, because of the name, really. It was more just a case of an association. But, you know, I can think back to the years of, say, Trevor Morley, Ian Bishop. Growing up, obviously, you've had players from Marco Bugas, the crazy Marco Bugas story. Have you ever heard of that one?
No.
You've never heard of them? Well, the West Ham fans will know Marco Bugas as basically being a Dutch player that Harry Redknapp bought off a video. He had a video of the guy and said, yeah, he looks all right. And he brought him over, and he went doolally in about his second game, went two-footed on Gary Neville, got sent off, disappeared, and ended up in a caravan somewhere. He'd run away into a caravan. He was an absolute lunatic player. If you say Boogers to a West Ham fan, everyone knows the story. And growing up, obviously, I had sort of two sides to it. I had the footballing side and the working there side. So I see sort of, obviously, growing up with the players. And I've got one funny story about a player, an old player. I remember I was a kitchen porter at the time. And if anyone remembers the old main stand, it was a massive long corridor going through it, right down all the way past the executive boxes. But you could see all the way down through like the glass. And I was at one end trying to get to the other end. And all I could hear was this bang. And every door that was somewhere in front of it was bang. And it was getting louder. It was like something out of Jurassic Park. It was just like, bang, bang. And I'm thinking, who is it? Frank McAvenny comes through the door. Absolutely blotto. I'm talking, bang, through the door. He comes falling through. He's fallen through every door going through. And I'm just looking at him. He's like, you ain't that kid. Bang, continuing walking down past me. Absolutely blotto, right? I'll never forget that. Special memories of the place. I've got so many. Like some of the games, you know, I remember seeing West Ham drawing with Manchester United, preventing them winning the titles, and Blackburn winning the league. That was an amazing game. I mean, I've never seen, I think it was Ludo and Steve Potts said, I think the game of their life. And I was right behind the goal that day, and the atmosphere there was amazing. You know, other special, like, it sounds really silly, but Carlos Tevez scoring his first goal. West Ham fans will remember it was the free kick against Tottenham. And he turns and he runs to the crowd and he jumps in the crowd. I remember that, you know, there's so many. And the last ever game, the last ever season there as well. I think every game felt like a cup final, you know, beating Spurs, beating Man United the last game of the season. It was an unbelievable season. And I think I feel very lucky to have had the opportunity to go to Upton Park and experience it firsthand. That's my sort of major special memories off the top of my head.
It's amazing that, isn't it? Because it is one of those grounds that I think will always go down as sort of proper English football history. And I think when you moved over, there was, I'm sure, some excitement that West Ham were moving up a level. It felt that they were certainly aiming to sort of be one of the biggest clubs in England and Europe and beyond. But I think for general kind of fans of Premier League and, well, English football in general, there was a real sadness about it. And I'm sure, of course, there was sadness more so with West Ham. But I think there was no fan of English football who thought, oh, I can't believe I'm never going to be able to get a chance to go to that ground now. It was sad, I would say. And of course, football's got to move on. You know, all teams have done it. All teams have at some point had to move ground. And of course, that'll happen to a lot of clubs going forward. But for you personally, what were your feelings when you had that last game of the season and you were moving to the new ground? Were you positive about it or were you reluctant?
I was reluctant. I'm a bit old fashioned, I'm a bit old school in that sense. But it was a weird dynamic. I think because of the offer that was put to West Ham fans, it was hard to turn down. You know, I remember I think it was like £2 million a year rent. That's it. Mm. That's all we had to pay. And I think maybe a percentage of the merchandise had to go to the London Legacy Company. But that was it. And we were getting this brand new spanking stadium, you know, for £2 million a year. You couldn't turn it down. I was absolutely, I think it hit me more, not so much the last game of the season, but the first game at the London Stadium.
Mm.
So I think the last game, it just felt like another game there. It just felt like another match. And I realised the sort of, what's the word, the significance of it, but not really until my first ever game at the London Stadium that I was like, this don't feel right. This isn't West Ham. This is very generic. I think West Ham did make a complete cock up of it at the start. They really messed it up at the start. There was a lot of promises that weren't delivered by West Ham. I think it didn't feel like our ground. There was nothing there to say it was West Ham. It was just another stadium. I think that was a big oversight from the club. I think with regarding seating, now obviously I'm sure you have it at Reading, right? You've got areas where you know you've got popular, like the fans that are like the rowdy ones sit at X stadium and the families sit there and this and that. And everyone knew their place at Upton Park. Whereas what they'd done at the new ground, they just mishmashed everyone together. And they didn't think of that. And it was absolute carnage at first. I think that's what really put a lot of people off the whole situation. So I don't think it really hit me until I got to the London Stadium how much the Upton Park meant to me. And I think that's why I say I struggled to go to London Stadium. It feels like a mourning a loss. It feels like I should be wearing a black armband every time I go over there or something like that. You know what I mean? I remember one of my first games there, seeing a kid there sitting there eating popcorn. Now, I know it's a petty little thing, but I was like, popcorn? It's a bloody football match. What do you mean popcorn for?
Yeah.
And another one, I see, it must have been a fella and his missus, right? They're probably, I feel he's probably been out of Westfield for the day, right?
Yeah.
And they're coming in with shopping bags and they're having them. And I thought, where are you? Where are you? You know, I feel, don't get me wrong, I bet he was roped into it a little bit, right? But I think itself, you've got shopping, they've probably been out to, you know, Nando's, Wagamama's, they've had a nice little meal, they've been out to Westfield, catch a bit of it. I thought, no, this worked for me. I'm sorry, no. And I think, and that's what I can sympathise with your father-in-law a hell of a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, but one thing is that the move was, I guess, the ambition move of West Ham to try and be bigger and, you know, play at a higher level. Now, there has been a level of success over the last couple of seasons. You've had a couple of sort of relegation battles and things like that, but the season just gone, getting into Europe and going on a European tour. I mean, that is really... Do you think... Well, first of all, did you manage to get to any of the European games, or what was your experience of just watching the European games and seeing West Ham back out there again?
Experience of seeing West Ham and European games. I got to go to one. I went to Lyon. I couldn't get a ticket. I tried for love and money to get a ticket. Couldn't get one. I was due to go to actually Salzburg. Was it Salzburg? Yeah, was it Salzburg? No, Vienna. Apologies. I do put it on. It was Vienna. I'm sure it was Vienna we were playing. Yeah, it was Vienna. But it was when the COVID kicked off over in Austria that I couldn't, that they stopped it all, so I didn't go. Yeah. So I managed to get out to Lyon, and it was absolutely amazing experience. It was a little bit of a bucket list tick for me. Because I've always wanted, there's like one of these dreams of always going to see West Ham in Europe. And so I said to my dad, like, even if we can't get tickets, I'm going. As for the other games, funny enough, I did also have one of those dodgy Bulgarian channels that I was watching it on throughout the whole thing indoors. The wonders of Twitter and finding a good link. So I was watching, I watched them all. I watched all the European games. And I think for us to get to Europe was, for a lot of West Ham fans, including myself, like, I am going to say a dream come true and a little bit kind of surreal, because we're so used to, for so many years, either mid-table obscurity, fighting relegation, to actually say, hold on a minute, we finished in the top five in the league. We're now in the Europa League. And not only that, we got to the semi-final.
Mm.
It was a dream season. It was an absolute dream for us to get that far. And I think... if we'd have just had a little bit more squad depth, one or two more players, who knows what could have happened. You know what I mean? But it's just amazing at the minute to see West Ham in Europe. It's still a novelty. I'm still trying to get used to it.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
Did you start to dream around when you got to that semi-final? I think there was people wondering, because it was challenging, this Europa League. It was a hard one. You had like Barcelona in there. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. there was a lot of big teams in there. Once you got to the semi-final against Frankfurt, did you start to dream? Did you think, yeah, we can do this?
I was more, it sounds really silly, I was more confident with Lyon than I was at Frankfurt, because I thought we had the ability to beat Lyon. And I thought to myself, Frankfurt have just beat Barcelona, and Barcelona are no match, obviously. So I thought, this is going to be the toughest game of the lot, was Frankfurt. I thought, if we could score first, we'd stand a massive chance. We didn't. So I think, I was more confident with us going far with Lyon, is when I see the draw after that, I was a bit like, I don't know, if you know what I mean. But I thought, I was excited, because I thought if we got through this, we'd potentially have Rangers in the final. Mm. You know, the Battle of Britain clash would have been absolutely amazing. Yeah. I think not just for West Ham and Rangers fans, but I think for neutrals as well. I think it'd been a brilliant clash. But it's not as much this season as well, but I think it's give every West Ham fan a sense of optimism for the future. You know, there's a bit of a mentality shift and an ethos shift over there, where we was always thinking, you know, 40 points and we're safe. Now we're thinking, well, we've got the Europa Conference League this year. Well, you know, Leicester got really far in it. Why can't we go find it? Look what we've done. There's this it's a different mindset over there now. Especially with, I'd say, more of the younger supporters as well. They're sort of growing up into this, which is a different world to what I grew up into at West Ham. So who knows what could happen this year, next year. Fingers crossed, we can go far in Europe again. Again, I should say.
So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do something we do in the podcast just to show you I've done some research. I hit you with what we call emergency facts, where I'll swing a fact at you and see if you know it. Let's see, what did I find?
Oh, let me get Google out. Wait there.
Here we go. So so did you know the Hammers played the first FA Cup final at Wembley?
Yes, was that the White Horse final?
That would have was that, been.
No. Was that Preston?
No, Bolton.
Bolton
lost 2-0, but it was the first FA Cup final at Wembley.
Ah,
something there. What else did I find? A couple of these I think you've mentioned actually. what have we got? This one I quite liked.
Go on.
Brian Deer holds a record for quickest 5 goals scored. Brian Charles Deer, who was called Stag by West Ham fans, managed to break one of the club's records by having scored 5 quickest goals ever. It only took him 20 minutes to achieve this in a game against West Brom back in 1965. Deer's senior career started in the Hammers, where he played from 1962 to 1969. In fact, it's actually the only team he had ever played for, and thus his reputation of a true Hammer.
Well, there you go. I did not know that.
There we go.
That's the sort of thing my old man would come out of. that's the sort of thing my old man would come out of in the pub randomly. And we'd go, how do you know that? And he'd just go, oh, no, don't you, what do you mean you don't know it? I'd be like, no. So I did not know that one.
I wonder if weren't West Ham part of one of the teams who had that mad Boxing Day in the 60s? I wonder if it would have been that game. It was like a boxing day in the 60s where everyone like won 12-0 or like 42 or things like that. It was like, and I swear West Ham might have won like 12-0 that day or something.
I'll have to Google that, because I've never heard it. I know one of the biggest wins we ever had, I think it was 8-0. And I think that was against Newcastle. I don't know if that was the same day. But I'll have to Mad Box, I've never heard of that.
What was it? Boxing Day. Oh, it was in 1963.
Was it 60? I've never heard of that.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. So Boxing Day 1963. West Ham did play that day, but they lost 8-2.
Ah.
That was against Blackburn.
So it was, yeah, we was there. We just got spanked, basically. Yeah.
So basically there was this really weird day. It was Boxing Day 1963. You could tell obviously they were allowed to have a good drink on Christmas Day back then. And there was just mad scores. So scores such as Chelsea beat Blackpool 5-1, Burnley beat Man United 6-1, Fulham beat Ipswich 10-1, Liverpool beat Stoke 6-1, Nottingham Forest were 3-3, Tottenham and West Brom were 4-4, Blackburn beat West Ham 8-2, and it was 3-3 at Villa and Wolves. So 66 goals were scored in one day.
Imagine if we had Soccer Saturday then. It would be going mental, wouldn't it? So you'd have like, everyone, Stelling, Mercer, they'd all be just going loopy, wouldn't they, with a goal. We've got a constant threat of goals. I've never, obviously, I knew about the big game that we had. I knew about the big loss, but I never knew, realised it was on a Boxing Day.
Oh, here we go. I like this one. Because as the listeners know, I'll have every opportunity to bring it back to Reading. The Hammers were the first winners of the FLWC, which sounds really cool, actually, in modern, but it's the Football League World Cup, which took place for the first time during World War II. The Hammers played well during the wartime, managed to win the first FLWC ever, winning against Blackburn Rovers in the decisive game. Now, I love this tournament because it took place during World War II, right? And when we had Nathan Caton on, we were talking about Brentford played in this league as well. And there was even a cup that went with it, a World War Cup, which was won a season by Reading. So we did achieve something. But at one point, what I thought was funny is that when we recorded with Nathan Caton, it was in the middle of lockdown in 2020, where Brentford were going to the playoff final. And obviously there were no fans and all that sort of stuff. Facts was that during World War II, while Brentford were competing, their ground got bombed, got flattened.
Right.
And they went without fans for two games only. Two games all, one caretaker, brush it all away, got them back in for the next game.
That's quality. That is quality. That is class. I did actually know that fact. That's the one fact I didn't know. I did know that when he's always like saying West Ham won the World War Cup, the wartime cup. West Ham were the first, were the winners of the wartime cup. And that's the only one I didn't remember the exact name of it. Mm. When you said the wartime cup, I was like, yeah, I know that. I knew that saying. Yeah.
It's good, like you said, back.
I love little facts like that. Love little facts like that. No, I've got a fact for you.
Oh, go on.
Right. Well, I know you probably know the answer, right? But I love this question. Who were the last team to win at Highbury and the first team to win at the Emirates against Arsenal? Supposedly it was West Ham, yeah. West Ham.
That's good. That's a good fact. I wish I'd had that one, actually. That's a better one. You mentioned earlier when we were talking about West Ham's campaign in Europe, and you mentioned about the depth of the squad. And I was just wondering, going forward, it does seem, like you said, there's more positivity this season. And for the 2022-2023 season, do you think West Ham have done enough in the summer? And do you think they need to do more as the season progresses?
Well, as in regarding buying players and recruitment, things like that, yeah?
Yeah, making sure the squad's ready, basically.
At the minute, yes. But we've still got a bit of a way to go yet. Like, we've signed a player, and I can't pronounce his name properly. So, like Agued. He's, I think he's Moroccan. We signed him from Rennes, left-sided centre back. Apparently, an exceptionally good defender. I've never seen him play, but from what I've heard pre-season, he's been playing decent, and he's going to be a good player. We've signed Areola on a permanent, which is a great signing. I think 11 million for him is a good buy. He's a good signing, and he's a good, because I reckon Fabianski's probably got one more season in him. And I think he'll be the natural successor to Fabianski, which will be a good successor as well. And we've also signed Flynn Dowds from Swansea. A very good midfielder. A bit worryingly, he looks and reminds a lot of players of Declan Rice.
Right.
Which, you know what I'm thinking, he's going to be the kind of natural successor of Declan Rice. As proposing what we need, we are desperate for forwards. And I'm talking absolutely desperate for forwards. We don't have one. And I think there's a silly fact out there. And I think the last forward we actually had was Amand Broja, who went on to play for Celtic. And Moyes has never signed a forward. Moyes has never signed a forward for West Ham. And we literally have Mikhail Antonio, who's a makeshift forward. Mm. So we're desperate. I'd say if not two. We're linked strongly with Brojan from Chelsea. The latest rumour I heard from him is he's going to come to us on loan for a season with a view to buy. Fine, I'll take it. We're linked with a lad from Italy called Scamacca. I think it's Scamacca, something like that. Apparently they've accepted the bids for him, £40 million. It's just getting it over the line. We're linked with Onana from France. Same thing again, solid midfield, but I heard quality player. And then the soap opera continues regarding Jesse Lingard.
I was about to ask about him, yeah.
It's turned into a bit of a farce, if I'm honest, and a bit of a soap opera regarding him. And at first, this is my personal opinion, at first, I would have bit your hand off for him. But now, I'm a little bit reluctant to take him. And I think it's purely because instead of, you know, we helped him out a lot when he was at Man United. So he was in the wilderness. We took him alone for 6 months. We got him back in the England fray. He had a great 6 months. Whereas we were going to take him. Man United had offered a silly figure of 40 million, which we knew he would be out of contract this season. So we thought, we're not going to pay 40 million now. We could wait a season. But even not coming back to us on loan or anything like that, he sat on the bench for a year at Man United. Now he's out of contract. Rumour has it he was asking for a ridiculous wage packet. Because obviously he's not getting a transfer fee, he was asking, I think, on the region of £180,000 a week, which is totally past West Ham's, probably couldn't afford that, you know. So, and now he was kind of fishing around to see who else is interested, which says to me he's more interested in the money than anything else, which I'm a little bit reluctant to take him. Don't get me wrong, he was quality for us, but it's left a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth considering what we've done for him, you know. But as long as we can get certain players, and but it's all positive, I think it could really, really benefit us this season. I think you could see a very strong challenge for us this season. But I also think this season, the Premiership is going to be one of the tightest top 6-7 race you're going to see in a very long time. It's going to be a real tight one up there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's going to be, I think it could be detrimental, actually. I think you're absolutely right. First of all, there that it's going to be a big race for the top. I think there's going to be some surprises, and I think that's actually going to be detrimental for the World Cup, because I think right in the middle of this chase, we're suddenly just going to stop everything for 2 months and then take everybody to Dubai and have a summer tournament in the winter. And I think it's just going to be bizarre, and that's going to cause, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with injuries, fatigue, and things like that. I think the league could be all over the place this season.
I totally agree. Normally around that sort of time, clubs be sort of trying to gain momentum. You know, people have good Christmases, bad Christmases. Whereas in theory, we're going to have like, how long is it? It's a month, isn't it? The World Cup, isn't it? So we're going to have like, in theory, a month's break in the middle of the World Cup, in the middle of the league. And then obviously, you know, the UK is not known for its fantastic weather, with the exception of now. You know, you might have games getting abandoned over the winter period. It's going to throw it all off kilter this year, all off kilter. I don't know how they're going to do it. But as regarding quality challenging for the top six, I think if you look around, this was last season was West Ham's best season to cement himself as a top five position again. What with Ten Hag now at Man United, I think Conte is going to do an amazing job at Spurs. I think he's a brilliant manager. I think Tuchel at Chelsea, they're going to be a lot more, what's the word? A lot less drama around them, especially with Abramovich going and things like that. Liverpool are always going to be there. I think Arsenal, I think Arteta's really forming something good there. And then Man City's Man City. So I think it's going to be an amazing top six fight this year. Amazing top six fight. And then you've got sort of slight fringe clubs, people like Wolves. Wolves are not far off. Like, and I like Wolves. I think they're a good side. I don't know, you might get a surprise club popping in there. I don't know, but yeah, I think this season's been an interesting season, definitely.
Now, one thing I wanted to talk about, it's a player I've always had had a lot of admiration for, and it feels like an end of an era. And that was to talk about Mark Noble, who obviously for the podcast there is a salute there. There are tears, everything coming from Trevor now. He needs a minute.
And I just, talk to me about it.
Now, of course, obviously, you know, you've been a fan for a long time, and he's been there for such a long time. And I just wondered if you could share with me some of your memories of having Mark Noble as a worthy captain, and how you feel now he's gone and it's an end of an era.
You've said it in a nutshell. It's an end of an era. I think it's an end of a sort of player. You won't get many players like him again, you know, coming right through the ranks of youth player playing for one club team. The only other player you can sort of think of, like someone like Steven Gerrard of that sort of era, was like that. He was Mr. West Ham. He grew up in Canning Town. I remember hearing stories of him when he first started playing, getting the bus down to the ground as a first team player, which I thought was brilliant. He has been there through thick and thin. He's been there from the good times and the bad. I think he, once again, I think he was another player that was really overlooked for England. Now, I wouldn't suggest that he is England first in quality over Gerard, Lampard or Scholes, not in the question. But compared to some of the other players that got a cap, I think so. Surely he's at least worth one friendly, you know. I think, you know, I remember seeing him. He had a great season under Allardyce. I remember because he had Kevin Nolan alongside him. Kevin Nolan was, his legs were shot, basically. So he was doing a two-man job for a whole season. I think a lot of players were saying that he should have got an England call-up. Never did. He was also, did you hear about the story about him cleaning the dressing rooms?
No.
Have you ever heard that? There's a great, when he was West Ham captain, after every away game, he would sweep the dressing room and clean it. Totally clean the dressing room, top to bottom, make sure there's no junk mess like that. He would never leave it a mess. And I think they've handed over the baton to Ben Johnson.
Oh, really?
They're trying to keep that mould. You know, I heard, you know, behind the scenes, apparently he was amazing. He wasn't just a captain on the pitch. He was like Mr. West Ham. You know, I think every time a new player arrived, he would send him a text message personally saying, if you need anything you need, contact me. And yeah, once I say it, I think it's the end of a playing era. You're going to see him back there in some capacity, maybe in some sort of ambassadorial role. I wouldn't be surprised, maybe in a year or two's time, potentially something to do with the youth setup, maybe the kids, maybe the women's football. And who knows, 20 years down the line, he could be the next Billy Bonds manager in the club. You know, you just don't know. But I think the title end of an era sums him up in a nutshell, you know.
Yeah, because a lot of those stories you mentioned there, they're very old school. There's a nice link there to the old school of... well, not just of West Ham, but of football in general, you know, cleaning the changing rooms, making an effort as captain. People sometimes, I think these days, forget the role of a captain. They'll just whack the armband on anyone and go, oh, I'll listen to him on the pitch. But I think a captain is very important to a club and, you know, to get in touch with a new player. And even things like getting the bus, I mean, obviously that would have taken place a while ago. But, I mean, there are young players now in their teens who couldn't fathom the idea of getting a bus down to even a League Two club. So do you hope that that kind of ethos, and West Ham are, I suppose, have such an enriched history, and there is a lot of, and I can and see today, just talking to yourself, there's a lot of respect for the old school. Do you think that will carry on amongst the players in his absence?
I hope so. I think that's the word. I really hope so. I think what they've done pre-Noble going was they tried sort of nurturing Rice into that role. And I think they wanted Rice to slowly take that role as captain and adopt that sort of old school ethos. And then maybe he might then put that onto Flynn Dowd's coming through. Apparently Ben Johnson's really, really adopted it as well as a youth player. And I think I think the word hope, I generally hope now he, because he's still at the club and he's still involved with the club in some circumstance, that still stays within the ethos. Like I heard another story as well about him, about Jesse Lingard when he first came there. I think it was set up when they were on the team coach or something. Jesse Lingard sat there with his headphones on. I think this is what, and he turned around and went, take them off. He was like, what? He's like, we don't do that here. Put your phone down. We talk on the bus. We don't, there's none of this shying away. We're a team. And I just hope, all I say is I hope and pray that people like Rice, people like maybe the old guard at West Ham at the minute, of Bonners, your Rices, they kind of adopt that mentality and keep it going.
All right, Trevor, let's talk a little bit about your stand-up, mate. Again, doing my research. I thought, I mean, the way...
There's not much to research.
Well, you say that. Let's take a little look at this quote, shall we? I thought Trevor had a lovely personality. He was very relaxed and friendly on stage, and the audience warmed to him. His material was sharp and funny, and I think he thoroughly deserved his place in the finals of the Natties. I hope he goes far. By the one and only Joe Brand.
Yeah, that's my best quote. The best quote we've got from Joe Brand.
And, and of course, you got to the final of that competition, where you played at the Hackney Empire.
Yeah, I was lucky enough. Went to the, obviously there's kind of a audition / competition stage beforehand, sort of where you go there and there's like the judges there and you sort of you do your set, and I was really lucky enough to get chosen to do it, and I really thought it was kind of a little bit of a milestone moment in my comedy journey, and that it felt like I'd got somewhere and I achieved it. Now I do get this a lot. I always get put on first. I think it's because of my style of comedy, and I got asked to open it. And some other comedians might look at that and go, "Oh, thank God that weren't me."
Mm.
But I see that as more of an honor, you know, to be the first person out on a main showcase like that. That shows a trust from not only the organizers that I could get the show off and running. And Jo Brown was emceeing that night. She was absolutely diamond, like proper professional, introduced herself to all the acts, not a diva. And I even got a call back from her on one of her, when she went on after, which I was well chuffed with. Like,
love it.
She'd done a call back to one of my jokes, which I thought was awesome. And she said to me, brilliant set. So yeah, that's probably one of my highlights of being a comedian, definitely.
No, I bet, man. And we met, I think, back in 2017, we first gigged together, which was downstairs at the King's Head.
Many moons ago.
Yeah, yeah. And I was always a big fan, man. I really love your stuff. I really love, you know, a proper working class sort of comedian. And I really admire that. And I loved your stuff straight from there. And I've seen you since. In fact, I even came to watch you as an audience member at Victoria's.
I was waiting for you to bring that up. I was waiting for you to say that. Yeah.
Me and my wife came to watch it. And my wife never goes to stand-up, by the way. She never comes with me to stand-up. She doesn't come to my shows. So she's probably only been to two more of my shows than she has yours now. So
really?
There you go. Yeah. So we came to see you at Victoria's Festival in Portsmouth.
That's right. That was one where you got the stomach bug, wasn't it?
That's it. Yeah. Next day, yeah, I got
two bob bits.
That's it. Yeah. I got the shit so bad. Lost about 2 stone.
Because I was missus enjoy my set.
Yeah, definitely. Good. She always, the thing is, she says she doesn't like stand up. Every time we go though, I drag her along. She goes, I don't like stand up. It's too like, what if they pick on me? Whatever. And then I'll go there, and whoever we go and see. We got like a theatre near us. We might go and see like a comedian or someone. Like I think we'll see like a Gamble, someone like that. Get in the audience, and the first thing he says, she's just like loudest one in the room laughing straight away. So yeah, no, she really enjoyed it. Yeah, and that was you had a good little audience in as well for that.
I was really pleased with that. The first day there, you were there the second day, I think.
Yeah.
First day was okay. The second one, I had quite a full 10. I was really, really pleased with it, because it was a midday gig and about 3 o'clock or something like that. And there was a lot of other acts on. There was a lot of music going on. And I thought, I might have one man and his dog here. But it was actually quite a full 10. And I was really, that was my first, I'll let you in a little secret as well. That was my first proper 20.
Oh, really?
I'd done a couple sort of open mic-y sort of 20s before that. But my first proper 20 was that. But I didn't tell the promoter. And I was like, I was like, I'll give it a go. I can't go bad. And I thought it went all right, actually. So
yeah, it was great. Really good. And obviously the best thing about a festival is, and people who've been to Edinburgh, they'll know this, you can kind of, well, any music festival as well, you can kind of make your own kind of fantasy lineup for the day. You know, see this person first and this person. And that's very much what I did that day. So I don't know if you know, but technically I like to think of the person I saw before you that day is the person who opened for you. And before I saw you that day, before we came over to see you in the comedy tent, we saw Craig David. So, what a day. Craig David, Trevor Bickles.
Yeah, it's 7 days, mate. Check it out. I mean, literally, Craig David, I think, what more do you have to say to that? You know what I mean? I've smashed it, mate. I've smashed it. It's not the Joe Brand quote. I've done it.
Yeah, there you go. So it was, I think it was Craig David, yourself, and then Rag and Bone Man. What a lineup.
That will never happen again.
Sorry, I don't know if you mind me sort of pushing this out there, but one of the best performances I've ever seen, and these go out quite a lot, of the Up the Creek Blackout Challenge. Yours from, I think it was February 2020. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely loved it.
Oh, mate, I don't know what to say. I couldn't expect that. Thank you. That's really nice, yeah.
By the way, really, really good.
I am now doing pro nights at Up the Creek as well. So check out the website. I think I'm back there next month. So yeah, I will be up
the creek. There you go. Look at that. In 2 years, you go and do the Up the Creek Challenge, and it's no surprise when you if you ever see that clip, it's no surprise that he's now doing pro nights there. And that's a fantastic comedy club to be doing as well. Great stuff. Well, it's been really good to chat to you today, Trevor. But of course, we finished the podcast, everybody's favourite bit. It's now time for you to pick Trevor Bickles
personal favourites. We don't want the best players of all time. We don't want the legends necessarily. Just five players in a West Ham five-a-side team. You're the gaffer, and you just pick who you want, but they have to be five players that mean something to you. Who you got?
Right, we'll go. I did pick a goalie for number one.
Good.
Ludek Miklosko.
Right.
Now, I'll give you a quick brief on why I do it. I won't be long. Basically, Ludek Miklosko was a keeper back in the 90s. He was from the old Czechoslovakia, and he's become a bit of a sort of cult hero legend over there, to the point where even now, to this day, 20 years down the line, he's still got a song about him, and it still gets sung. So to me, it's got to be Ludo in goal. No questions asked.
Love it.
So I'll go. So
yeah, go for it. Yeah. Get it through.
Yeah, cool. Number two, I've mentioned him before. He was my idol growing up, Julian Dix. Yeah. The Terminator, one of the hardest nails player, one of the hardest penalty takers you'll ever see. If you ever Google Julian Dix penalty against Peter Schmeichel, he wellies it so hard that he almost throws his hand back into the net. And I still think he was one of the best left-backs never to play for England.
Mm.
It was back in a time where it was more, I hate to say it, unless you were part of the sort of the top three or four big clubs, you weren't getting in England.
Yeah.
I think if he was playing at the time for any of those clubs, he would have got in their hands down. So definitely Julian Dix. Number three, you said don't name a megastar, but I've got to name this man, Paolo Di Canio.
Wow, the legend.
you know when people say, right? You know when people say, genius, like there's a fine line between genius and lunatic.
Yeah.
Right. That is Paolo, right? On one hand, he is an absolute madman. But on the other hand, he is one of the best footballers I think I've seen all together over West Ham. You know, like his technical ability, his passion, his playing style was just out of this world. I mean, absolutely out of this world. So I've definitely got to put Paolo Di Canio in there.
Mm.
Now, for my fourth one, I had a chat with my brother today about this because I give this question to my brother, right? I want to see his opinion. And he's told me to put this player in, right? So I've Slaven Bilic.
Now, right, okay.
People seem to forget that Slav played for us as well as managed.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why I'd love to have him in there, because I'd love to ask him, like, not only what was it like being a player at West Ham, but what happened the whole Payet-Sacco saga, because he managed all that for a very, very turbulent time. And I think people seem to forget how much of a quality player for us and manager. And I think I've got to have Super Slav. Another one with a great song over, Super Slav.
Yeah.
and my final one, slight curveball, because I think he was one of the best players, best forwards we ever had for the club, but he got injured young, was Dean Ashton.
Dean Ashton, yeah, interesting. He retired at, what, 29, I think, or something like that, didn't he? Might have even been younger.
I think it was slightly younger, if I remember rightly, because we signed him from Norwich.
Mm.
And he was playing really, really well. Come to us, and he was an absolute beast of a player.
Yeah.
And Newcastle were really sniffing around him to be like the next Shearer. And some of his goals, and I'll tell you, if anyone listens to this, Google Dean Ashton bicycle kick.
Mm.
And he played in the Mark Noble testimonials. Now, to take in consideration, he's been retired for a couple of years. He played in the Mark Noble testimonial, and the bicycle kick he scored was a worldie.
Mm.
And I think that just showed that the level of player that he was, even in retirement years, that he was an absolute beast of a player. So I'm going to put in a player that should have gone on far for us, never did, was Dean Ashton.
That is a fantastic lineup. Fantastic lineup. Just what we were looking for. I love this part of the podcast. It's always my favourite bit. And I'll tell you what, Di Canio is quite popular where I am now because I moved away as well from my hometown. I now live in Swindon. And of course, Di Canio's legacy in Swindon as manager is unbelievable. Yeah. Whenever I go to it, I sometimes go with my wife's husband to a... My wife's husband? I am my wife's husband. It's a very modern, it's very Swindon, that, isn't it?
Yeah. That is very Swindon. Very. We'll let you off because it's the hottest day of the year. That was heat. Heat stroke. That's
what you got. Heat stroke. My wife's sister's husband, sort of brother-in-law, he's local and he's Swindon. And I go to a couple of games with him. I went to the Man City game in the FA Cup, went to that. And
right.
Whenever you go there, you always overhear someone going, do you remember when DiCanio did this? Do you remember when DiCanio subbed the keeper off after 17 minutes? Like, he was a nutter.
One of the best things I'll quickly say about DiCanio, and it wasn't when he was with West Ham or Swindon, it was when he was with Sunderland, right? Yeah. Do you remember the famous picture of him celebrating when they won?
Yeah.
And he was on his knees, just screaming at the Newcastle fans. And it was the most DiCanio celebration you've ever seen, right? Absolute bonkers. There's so many stories of him, like the time that when he was playing Bradford, right? We beat them 5-4, I think it was. And he was getting kicked all over the park, and he should have had about two or three penalties. And I think the story was that he went to walk off.
Yeah.
And Harry Redknapp said, "What are you doing?" And he's going, "I'm not playing anymore. I'm not playing." And he's like, "Get back on the pitch." He's like, "No, I'm not playing. Yeah. I don't want to play." And he's like, "He's just a lunatic." But then you'd get him the ball, he'd beat four players and score. Absolute genius of the player.
Yeah, I remember that incident when he just walked off and just said, "I'm not playing anymore," until the ball came near him, and then he ran a bit and then he'd stop again.
Yeah. He's like, "Yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going home. I've had enough." And it's like, "Paolo, get back on the pitch, you madman." You know what I mean? Absolute legend. Legend, legend, legend.
Oh, mate, love it. Absolutely love it. Well, thanks very much, mate, for your five-a-side team there. And thanks for being a great guest on the podcast. I know we've been trying to get you on for a while, so it's fantastic that we finally got to do this.
No, the pleasure's been all mine. Honestly, thank you ever so much for asking me on. It really means a lot to me to be asked to come on. So it's because I've seen the lineup of other comedians you've had on, and to be put alongside them is very nice. Don't you do your first pro night? You're all in the big names. Oh, you know what I mean? It's the same sort of feeling.
Bless you, mate.
Genuinely, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
That's really kind, mate. Thank you. And just quickly, for the listeners, where can we find you? Social media and all that stuff.
Right. So social media, it's Big Trev Taxi on TikTok. On Twitter, I'm just Trevor Bickle, Trevor Bickles Comedy. Facebook, you can have me on Facebook. My name's Trevor Bickles. I will be honest with you. I'm on Instagram as well, Trevor Bickles. And I will be starting to post a lot more of my gigs. Just keep an eye out for me. I'm starting to do a lot more in the bigger clubs, your backyard, Top Secret Comedy. No, not Top Secret. The Stand Up Club. Up the creek. I've recently been to the Stand up in Newcastle. So keep an eye out for me and hopefully you'll see me soon.
Excellent. As I said, if you see his name on a post near you, go and see him live. Absolutely fantastic act. One more time, thank you very much, Trevor. Really appreciate it, mate. Great to have you on. Hopefully see you soon as well.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Trevor. Love that guy. Absolutely love him. Do you know why I love Trevor, right? And I first met him about 5-6 years ago. He probably doesn't even remember this, but we were doing an open mic night in London. I won't say where. It was a long time ago, and everybody on that night was proper pretentious. Do you know what I mean? Proper pretentious. And there was me and him just sat there wanting to talk about football. Do you know what I mean? So probably another one of the reasons I ended up doing this podcast is situations like that. But anyway, look, it's great to have Trevor on. Do go check out his stuff, especially his TikTok account, which is at Big Trev's Taxi. There's some great stuff on there. It's really, really funny. And if you ever see him performing near you, go and see him live. I've booked him recently for my comedy night and I can't wait to have him on. Anyway, listen, until the next episode, if you've enjoyed this, you could do me a massive, massive favour, and that is go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify, wherever you listen to this podcast, and leave us a review. I would really, really appreciate that. Or failing that, why not just tell one of your mates if you think they'd enjoy the podcast? If you enjoyed this one and you're new to the series, then why not look back? We've got some great previous episodes as well. Comedians such as Maisie Adam, Nathan Caton, Mark Olver, the cast of This Country, Freddie Quinn. Some really, really great guests. We've got some great guests coming up as well, including next week, where my guest will be Karen Bailey, and she's talking all things West Bromwich Albion. So until then, thanks for joining me for Comedians Talking About Football.
Football. Soccer. At the end of the day. Football. Soccer. It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Sports Social Podcast Network.